the Pledge of Allegiance.
I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
Thank you. We have a very full room and a full agenda tonight. I want to thank everybody for coming. First section of the agenda tonight is a superintendent's report. There are three items on there, and the first item, Mr. Stewart.
Yes, we have the middle school robotics team. I think some exciting awards that are going to be presented by Ms. Bates and I think Mr. Roy, correct?
Yes.
Thank you. How are you?
After you, Ms. Bates.
Okay. Board of Education, we're here tonight to recognize the middle school robotics team for their efforts this year. Before we begin, in fact, I'll just explain a little bit about what it is for those of you not familiar. FIRST Robotics stands for Inspiration and Recognition of Science and Technology. And it started probably like 1990, 1989 up in New Hampshire, and the idea was to inspire young students like ours to go into education and careers eventually in the area of science, technology, engineering, and math. One of the pieces that I love most about our robotics program is that it not only develops the hard skills of those science, technology, engineering, and math, but also the soft skills, those interpersonal skills, those interpersonal communication leadership skills that are much harder to measure, but equally as important for our students. So this year, the middle school competition was on Super Bowl Sunday. We couldn't miss it. A lot of the dads were like, what?
Yes.
But it was a wonderful competition, and I'm excited to say that our middle school team placed 12th at the competition, which is a huge accomplishment. We were the only middle school team at that competition. The way FIRST Robotics works is there's a few different levels or programs. So there's a Lego League for elementary school students and middle school students. There's called, you might hear it referred to as FTC. But it's FIRST Tech Challenge, and that's for middle school and high school students, and then robotics for high school students. So as you can see, the middle schoolers kind of fall into either category. They can either compete in the Lego League, which we did 3 years ago, or the FIRST Tech Challenge, which we've done the past 2 years. We were the only middle school team, and they did a wonderful job. Everyone kept coming up to them, myself, Mr. Roy, and their parents, saying things like, are you like mini high school geniuses, or are you, like, where are you from? They couldn't believe that middle school students were right up there with them competing. So what that says to me is that Board of Education, I think these faces right here in a few years in the robotics program, you'll see wonderful, wonderful things, because the brain of the robot, if you will, in the FIRST Tech Challenge is the same as that of the high school program. So I think they're very well prepared, and we'll keep getting better and better each year. So, Mr. Roy, I'll turn it over to you, and then give out the certificates and recognize the
Jason, you were 12 out of how many? I
know 25. There was 12 out of 25.
Yeah, so
there's approximately 10,000 teams throughout the country. We're the 9,122nd team. So to give you an idea of how many teams there are, it's a big program. It's not just it's all over the world. And most teams are high school. In fact, 99.99% of the teams are high school. What happened was they started the big robot, and this was a way to get the little robot, the big robot feeling with the little robot, with the little robot costs. It was kind of like this trade-off that other schools kind of said it was cheaper, it was more accessible. And a couple of years ago, maybe 2 years ago, I came to Miss Bates and I says, you know, I got this crazy idea. We may be committing robot suicide here, but we are going to try to do this next level, and we're going to take it on the chin a little bit, and we didn't. The funny thing is, they did such a great job that we were at the very end, we were like this close to being in the finals, so it was a really good feeling. So a little bit about the robot that's unique. We incorporated the 3D printer this year. A lot of teams bought their tank drives. This team developed them from scratch. They are belts from the hardware store. And then we says, well, how can we make belts from the hardware store, make a robot drive? And the kids came, and we did some 3D printing, which was really cool. A lot of the older kids were really cool and helped the younger kids, because we do share the same area.
So you printed the spindle, the actual spindles that the belts go around?
Those are all printed on the in the 3D printer.
So you design them on the computer, mm-hmm. and then with the material of the printer, drill them
correct.
Down, and that's what you use as
yep.
your actual.
So One thing that these signs are actually 3D printed. One of the things that the 3D printer has done is it's helped me save my fingers, and let me explain. I have been a machinist for years. I mean, I've always machined parts, aluminum, steel on the lathe, the milling machine. And I'm starting to not miss it because a 3D printer can take something that would take me days or take the kids days to make, and they can just go home, push print, come back, and it's printed. Most of the time, where's Will? Most of the time, right, Will? It comes out all right. So that was really cool. It was a really cool aspect of it. Just one more kind of really great thing about the robot, then I'll talk about the kids, is that it uses Java. It doesn't use the same kind of programming language that the Legos use. It's not a drag and drop. It's hypertext. And it uses the real commands that are used in the real programming world. So that was another really big hurdle. And it communicates via cell phones. All these robots are going to communicate via cell phone. You can take out your cell phone and program the cell phone and then send it to that cell phone wirelessly, and that's the whole controller. It's the wave of it's the way that the robots are going to be kind of switching to, apparently. So I'm going to point out what our group did, give the kids some chance. If you look, we have a really great spectrum of students. We have a lot of females, which I think is fantastic. That's growing. That population of the entire robotics team is growing vastly, so that's a personal goal. I have daughters, so it's a personal goal that I wanted to see happen, and it seems like it is. Thank you, ladies. Also, we've got a good spectrum. We've got a lot of sixth graders. Raise your hand if you are in sixth grade this year. So not only were we competing against high school students, but we were competing against high school students versus our sixth grade, which was phenomenal. And everybody just go like this really quick. Little fingers still. They're all there, including myself. We all have all of our fingers and our eyeballs. So that in itself is another accomplishment that I would like to give them credit for. Nope, mine are all right here too. So that was a really good thing. I think what I'd like to do is have some of the kids just do a quick demonstration and maybe explain what a robot does, because I think part of the social skills that you mentioned would be great. So who wants to come on in here? And let's go, Mikey. Come on. Maybe you could explain while the ladies are showing what's going on. Maybe you're driving. So why don't you tell us what's going on, or just quickly what the robot's supposed to do. Jimmy, where's Jimmy? Come on, you're on, Jimmy. Tell them what it does. Come on. So want me to help you?
Nope.
Okay, good.
So pick up place box and to save first man of
the
man.
Just
find
yeah, got it.
So
so
we built that for that.
All right, well, let's add to that there, Jimmy. It's in an arena. That's what he meant to say. Is it's in an arena, and this is a model of our arena. There's a square arena that we play in, and there's debris on the field, and the object is to what? Right, to pick them up and deliver them into a bin. So maybe they could show you how that works. We'll do the man thing next, okay? Okay, we'll just reset it.
So did the team collaborate on writing the software to do this, or how does that work?
Okay, so the software is given to the kids in packets. So in other words, they don't have to randomly or raw write the code. It is raw code that's edited the same way, but they just drag. Like if I want to do a motor, they click motor, and the code for the motor.
They can
comes
see
in.
The code, see what it is. And
so when they want to say button C, but it's set for button A, then they program it to button C, then they do it on button C. So it's definitely much more realistic. Oh, there they go, the back working. We use all aluminum, and some robots use plastic and wood. We try to stick to a robot-looking robot. Is it driving, folks?
No.
That's par for a robot, by the way. It doesn't drive, just for the record.
So is there not a kit that comes? You can make it from whatever material
there,
you choose?
There is a kit, but it's not a kit of, like, it's not like a robot. It's just the parts that you see. Like, we just buy, like, one-foot sections of this tubing, one-foot sections of that tubing, six-foot sections of the material. Like, this is just a big sheet roll. Like, we make each piece custom. There's no instructions on how to build. Other robots look totally different. So with scoop, there you go. So they would drive around and they would pick up the cubes on the field, They would deliver it into that, we call it the scoop motor, and then that would deliver it into the goal, which is part of a big field that we don't have here. But it also incorporated push this. You had to, like, push a specific part on the field that released a man that would come down and score points. There's a lot of different aspects to it. There's other robots that look totally different that did the other aspects of the game, not just... Pretty impossible to do everything. You have to pick a couple things and do it well. There you go. So, I think they had a really good experience. They had a lot of mentorship from the older kids. They really helped a lot, which was awesome. They're surpassing my knowledge on the 3D printer, which is amazing. Why don't you guys do a little spin, and then we'll call this a robot.
Before I recognize the students, I just want to point out to Mr. Roy. You could all know did a phenomenal job as a middle school advisor. I know the parents know, but the board might not, that this particular club meets extra hours, I would say, than the average club. He was there many, many late nights with the students and really, really did a phenomenal job, went above and beyond with the middle school students. The day of, couldn't eat. He was so nervous. Mr. Roy said, "What, Mr. Roy, it is, we have to eat lunch." He's like, "I can't eat. We're focusing on the robot." So he was really, really just a phenomenal, devoted advisor.
I think Ms. Bates is a robot advisor.
All right. Without
further ado,
you want to call your name? You can come on up and get your certificate.
Logan Jakubowski. Come on up, kiddo. Let's just call them all. Why don't we just hold the applause and get them all up here, and we'll do one big Instagram.
Olivia Dench.
Beautiful picture. Not me. All right, come on up.
Emily Ferguson.
Thank you.
Congratulations. Jordan Lannard.
They're not listening.
Colin McGill. Congratulations. Jeremy Masterson. Dominique Malden. Kathleen Kelly. Grace Mintel. Charlie O'Loughlin. Nicholas Pace. Aiden Pellegrino.
Guys, try and tight for him. Let's get a back row here.
Yeah, maybe you
yeah, sure go down there.
You're tall. You can be in the back row. Come on over. Get over here.
Michael Perry.
Yeah, you can be wherever you want.
Linda Roy. She would have won the Spirit Award at that event. She was running around with the flag and the wig and awesome. Natalie Sims. And Danielle
Weihoffer. Can we squeeze in?
All
right, everybody, I got one more thing. I want you to turn around, and I want you to show everybody the back of your shirt, okay? All I'm going to say is there's no back on your shirt. There we go. I want you to look on our robots and look on our shirts, and all I'm going to ask you guys to do is just look at the names and make sure you use those vendors, please, in town, all right? And you go, well, there's a back on my shirt. Wait, there's a back on their shirt.
No, there's a back on like no one's shirt.
Yeah.
Oh, well, next time you're, you see a shirt, there you go. Just show them the shirt, please. All right. Make sure that you see those people in this community and use their services. Thank you. All right. You guys can sit. Your job is done. All right. Let's bring this in here. Come on down. Let's go.
Come here. Squat down a little bit.
No, I don't want to.
You got me.
Sorry. Hello.
All right. The robots.
Good job, guys. Again, with the fingers, I want you all to think about that. They all have their fingers.
I'm serious.
You're so funny. Good. Yeah,
almost afraid.
All right. Thanks, guys.
Thank you, Mr. Wright.
Thank you very much.
Thank you, sir.
Mike, please. I don't blame you. Go grab the robot.
Put that under my supervision.
Okay, don't hold it.
I'm sorry, I stumbled over. I'll give you one more as a minute. Thank you, my man.
Okay, tonight we also have a second presentation. We have Miss Heshen and I believe Miss Marino. Oh, there you are. I'm so sorry. Hi, Miss Marino. That's a compliment. Here to speak about guidance and more specifically, I believe, scholarships and college process, things of that nature. So thank you so much for coming and welcome. Well, give me the hand. That's a tough act.
Everybody's nice and happy, though. It's already a happy
feeling. That's good,
feeling,
yeah.
So
that's good.
Okay, so I think this is a good start, and to really show community members, board members, administrators, really, like, the whole process. But it really does begin, you know, when I was really trying to think of, like, how to present this. It really does begin even like what all those great kids were doing just now. You know, because it is such a process. It's not just, you know, they're juniors and then it's time to think about it. It's like it goes from when sometimes kids and students are really young to when they become older. So I don't need the microphone, right?
No, you're good.
No, you're laughing.
Okay, so of course we, when ninth graders enter the building, a guidance counselor's job is to really introduce ourselves and kind of help students with the transition. But in terms of really talking about like the post-secondary planning, we discuss what graduation requirements are and what it is really important to really think about what students are taking every year. So sometimes we don't think that is something that it shouldn't be taken lightly. You know, everyone is at a different level. People take very different types of courses. So really, right from the start, there is a plan, and things can always change. But that's when, you know, we meet with your ninth graders, and we really do encourage all of this involvement because that's how students develop. You know, the last part of the ninth grade developed passions and talents because even like with the robotics club, you know, if that's something that students are really interested in, it sparks other interests, it sparks, you know, different coursework that they might take. So it's really important to really kind of show what your personality is. You know, and sometimes ninth graders aren't ready to do that, and we really get that. For 10th grade...
So how do you, before we jump there, so how do we break up ninth grade among the guidance counselors? Do you each have a group?
Yes, by alphabet.
Okay, by alphabet.
Right.
And then how many times, just so that for my knowledge, do you meet with them as a group or do you meet with them individually?
Usually in the beginning we'll meet with them with a group just to introduce ourselves. But to be honest, we meet students individually even before school starts often because of schedule, maybe a change, maybe a concern, maybe, you know,
with
so
their
all
schedule
the
then.
With their schedule. Maybe a parent has a concern about, you know, a level or a specific schedule or
so
the way
in like
the schedule
your
is.
55 kids, I would say, right? Divided by 55 kids. Do you have a goal of trying to meet with each kid to discuss where they are developing their path a certain number of times per year? How do you manage that?
I would say for ninth grade, what we try to do is meet them by in the first month.
Mm-hmm.
but that could be in a group. And then there are some students who maybe we meet with more because of more issues may arise. And to be honest, sometimes if a student's just doing really well and there's nothing that comes up, it could be that we don't see them again until we meet with them to plan their courses for next year.
They don't really, I feel like by ninth grade, they don't really know that they're with us. They have different teachers every year, but they're with us individually for 4 years. So I've had, and I try to like echo that message to my parents. Like they're always welcome to come in, to have meetings, to let them know, because while they're your children, you know, we have a caseload of, you know, two, whatever it is, that I would love to know what your plan for your child is so that I can help support that.
What
so
is your goal? And maybe I should know this. I don't. What is, if I had to say, the goal of guidance for each kid is what? How do you finish that? What is the goal?
I mean, really, it is really the post-secondary planning. But again, it starts at such a young age. So it is so important for us to really know them, and I know sometimes it's harder to know certain kids. You know, I mean, some kids just sort of stand out and make themselves known, and not every student is like that. So that's why it is important to really meet individually. You know, there are a lot of schools, too, that when they plan their coursework, like I know my kids are at Sable, and they just go to a computer. Their teachers input their recommendations, and they just go to a computer, and they put in their electives, and they never talk to their counselor about that. But, you know, that would be maybe a very easy way to do that, but we do like talking to them and going through their grades and discussing, well, what would be good for you? And we do appreciate that our caseloads are very manageable, where we call kids in all the time. And you know, most of the kids here know that the guidance office is a place where I believe that students really feel comfortable in coming in and asking questions. Most of the times, they don't have to wait for an appointment, although, again, we would like that. But at the same time, we kind of enjoy just a student coming in and asking a quick question and getting an answer. And not saying, well, we'll see you in a week. You know?
Is this taught in eighth grade, though? Don't you meet, if I'm not mistaken, in eighth grade? Have you met the eighth graders yet or not?
Really, you know, I went into the eighth grade classrooms with Ed Caswell, and we went through all the courses and their choices, but we didn't really meet them individually.
Well, that's a group. So you went into all the eighth grade classes,
right.
And right now an eighth grader knows the courses that they're going to be taking.
Right.
And
right.
Gotcha.
Right.
Okay. I didn't mean to interrupt. So.
No, that's okay.
Yeah.
And then in 10th grade, I mean, I kept this really simple, but I will show you once we kind of go through this how we use Naviance as a tool. So in 10th grade, our goal is to have every 10th grader complete a career interest profile, which we'll go back to. And basically, that's an assessment that they take through Naviance. So each student has an account that our district pays for. And there are a lot of tools that we use with the students. They may not, you know, we'll get them logged on. To be honest, I wish that we had the usage of computers so we could use this more. And maybe in the future, we can do that. But right now, in order to have all the students log on, we have to bring them into the library to set up an account. And it gets very difficult to do that.
So this is not a web-based program that they can peruse at home with their...
Yep.
But to be honest, you know, they're not, for the most part, they're not going to just do this at home until maybe later, until maybe they're in 11th or 12th.
So it's not a one-and-done, figure out what your career interest is and move on.
Right, no.
It's continually.
No, this is like part of the process.
Okay.
And like I see in ninth grade with building a resume.
Right.
It's amazing what you forget that your children did along the way. And I know that one of the CSU, now that's kept track.
That has helped students like go back and keep tabs of what they've done since ninth grade, because before that, parents were like, I know I dropped them off on 1,000 places. I went on weekends. We did 1,000 things. But to be able to keep track of all that, I think CSU has the CSU Point program has helped tremendously.
Because really, eventually on their college application, they're going to, they should be hopefully list many activities
and
they're
volunteers.
That helps
part
also.
Of the reason why we were doing that.
Yeah.
Was hoping because it really is amazing what you can forget that you did, you know,
and
when you were in eighth or ninth grade.
Yeah.
And so keeping that, does Naviance give you the ability to keep track of
they do have a working resume that you can go in and help with that.
Can they log on to Job Yams before 10th grade or no?
Yes.
They can, yeah.
They all have accounts in 9th grade.
Okay.
So we have had, when we bring up Naviance and students and parents have called and said, could they get their account? We give that to them, yes.
Is that the gold standard? I mean, is that what every school is using? Are there alternatives?
Many are, some are not. Some schools are not, but...
Do they have a different program, or are they doing kind of
really.
Homegrown?
I feel like Naviance is. I know other districts like Babylon, there are other ways, because we submit their college applications through Naviance, that there are other ways that we could go through Common App, and there's no charge. However, there's also no other, like, bells and whistles. There's no career interest profiler. There's no do-what-you-are. There's no resume builder. So we're really kind of, like, giving them all the tools they possibly need to do that, whereas... In some other districts, they can do those things. You still are responsible to kind of figure out all those other steps, but the district can just send, you know, applications without that and just send them via the Common App, you know, SUNY EDU, whatever the...
Yes, and actually, we've been involved with a lot of schools. We actually went and taught the Three Village Guidance Department how to use Naviance and how to send all the transcripts and letters of recommendation electronically, because they were so afraid to do it. But it makes so much sense. It makes it so easy for students and
parents to see. Like, you know, Johnny submitted his application last night. Did it, rather than, like, old school, we used to just have to track it, send it, mail it, you know, just document everything. The parents can go online and say, oh, it was submitted this day.
And every school accepts
see
it.
See that.
Yes, most do. Some have to still
like
be mailed,
CUNY,
like the city colleges.
Yes.
How many times in 10th grade do you have to meet with each kid in your group?
You know, again, it really varies. We could have a student that we meet with 10 times, but we could have a student that we meet with twice.
Okay. Mm-hmm.
And any time a parent would call and say, you know, could we just meet, because it would be really great for you to know that my daughter did a summer program this summer.
Yeah.
You know, we welcome all of that.
But you see them at least once a year.
Plan their courses at least once a year, but that's very rare that it would be once a year.
You have some awesome kids in the room tonight, and I can speak from my behalf
right.
of what you have.
Right.
And I can tell you just, I name any names, but we've met multiple times, because there's some extraordinary kids that really deserve some, you know, really great accolades, and, you know, they're pursuing things that, you know, I've yet seen in my career, but it's, you know, just phenomenal.
How do we give them the ideas? How do we say, here are the things that are available to you in the world? We all live in Santa Maria's, which is a very small town, and we don't necessarily, as we've grown up here, know everything. You know, I was saying to Mr. Stewart, we were looking at the robotics. You know, I don't know that every one of the kids that were involved, and maybe you guys can tell me, but understand how that functions in real world today. You know, do you, I mean, and I don't want to put any one of you on the spot, you don't have to raise your hand, but do you get how the stuff that you did today is used in the real world?
Yes. More companies are relying on technologies such as robots and mechanical technologies to perform the things that used to be performed by humans, like putting together small products and stuff.
Exactly. And it's not space age, you know, next generation stuff. It's today, you know, and we're going to try and figure out a way for the robotics team next year to walk through a factory that's doing this. But what you guys built is exactly the way a factory works. So how do we do that? How do we open up to say?
Could I just ask, because I think who founded it is fascinating. I know it's a little harder, but do you know who founded this and what he's done?
Dean Kamen?
Yes, and what has he done? Talk about really world.
Rockstar.
I love this group.
He started when he was, like, really young. He created, like, the diabetic...
Insulin pump,
it was developed into the insulin pump, but he used it to give children cancer medication. He also did stuff with the Segwit, which is really cool.
Yep.
And he's also got his huge other...
Because his brother is a doctor, which is what inspired him to do that medical delivery thing. And he also is now in charge of our country's project because of so many veterans that have survived when they wouldn't have. He's working on making the best prosthetics that can work and feel and move and all those things. So, yeah, a lot of real-world applications. So I just think he's a fascinating guy. I'm so glad you know who he is.
it's awesome that you guys understand what you're doing. So how do we do that? How do we show them these things?
You know, I think that, you know, classroom visits can help, but I also think in terms of, like, even utilizing everything, say, that Naviance
you know, will teach them. I think that by having software in the classroom really will help, because, you know, maybe we can bring the kids into the library 3 times a year, if that. It's really difficult to get that accomplished. But also just meeting with them.
Do we do anything where we have, and I don't know what, you know, I know what some of the people in this room do, but do we do anything where we have, you know, parents in the community that are doing interesting or weird thing? You know, I mean, I know what you do. It's not something that a kid in high school would think, I'm going to put together this system to manage this entire building. Do we ever have somebody come in and talk about that?
I mean, probably in individual classes,
yeah.
But it's certainly something that...
Something to think about that may be interesting.
Like a career fair,
yeah.
Kind of thing.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. You know,
yeah, and we have had things like that in the past.
I didn't call him weird. I said it's not. You know, I think as a kid, you think teacher, doctor, lawyer, nurse. Those are the things you can get your mind around.
Right.
And it's something that, like today, like I had a junior conference today, and some of, like, I was, what's pretty typical, you know, kids 11th grade, 16 years old, awesome, you know, out of this world grades and everything. And I'm like, what do you want to go and do? And something with math and science,
right,
and technology. And that's fine, because you're still developing all that and you still don't know. And, like, bottom line, you know, when I'm sitting with a parent going through all that, is the job that the career we could be, you know, steering him towards could not even be developed yet.
Sure.
So just, like, having those conversations about, but also giving them the tools to, you know, when you're looking at a school, like, well, what are you looking for in that? Like, is that something that would interest you? Because math science doesn't necessarily mean robots. So, you know, or whatever it is for each individual kid. So I think just having a lot of those conversations as to, like, what your strengths are, what you're willing to go out and do, and how you can see that in, like, really telling them how to view that stuff in, when you're looking through the college process, when you're looking through any of it, really, you know, when you're hearing other people speak, what the other people's companies are doing, or just community
development.
And not to see
that real world application of, you know, here is how we bring this home. You know, and everybody's mind works differently. You talk about differentiated learning. Everybody learns differently. I wouldn't learn it necessarily reading it. If you came and showed, I'm not picking on you, but it's just because, you know, the robotics in a building and the software to manage that entire building is something that, you know, you guys could do, right? It's something that you've learned, and then what school do I go to do that?
Mm-hmm.
Anyway, that's
right.
Something I think would be interesting if we could figure out how to...
Mm-hmm. So, and sometimes if a student has, like, done any of these assessments on this computer, it does lead them to other places. So maybe while I talk about some of the tools that we can use, Nina will
open up Naviance.
How
do I
just
head
this
up?
Do we suggest that they do this
right
program, or do you do it with them?
Like, and then
okay.
Out?
Yeah.
So, okay, so the Career Interest Profiler, it's really, it's about 150 questions. And actually, you know what, if you pull up, yeah, so it's an 11th grader. I made up a student, so that we, so it's 11th grade, and it's Smith, S-M-Y. Penelope, yeah. So if you go to Family Connection, and then careers or about me, and then it's career just profile. Okay. So I pretended to be Penelope, and so I took the 150 question test, and then it came out. So it came out, I was very high and investigative, artistic, very social, not very realistic, enterprising. So then it shows, then it gives the definitions of what that all means, but then it goes to the view matching occupation list. And then it goes from median preparation. So say if is there something like a lower preparation than medium or not?
Not for this.
Okay, not for this. Okay.
Some of
so
them have
median preparation, it lists all the different kinds of careers, then it's considerable preparation, and then even
extensive.
So if, you know, it goes from everything that just based on me taking this assessment, different types of occupations. And then if, let's pick up, let's say, well, what's a recreational therapist? It's under considerable preparation, the third one. Okay. What's a recreational therapist? Well, then that describes what the job description is, the wages, the knowledge and skills, So it brings you to this, and then there also is a way to show what colleges have that major. So if you go down, and there's also a video, if you wanted to watch a video about what is a recreation therapist. So this is all more online as opposed to like in person, but at least in these are all the schools that have that major.
So do they
and
do
it?
It
is helpful. My daughter had this, and it was a really great college.
So some kids use it like
all
crazy.
The time.
Yeah.
But I would say a typical 10th grader, not. Right?
How do we get the kids to use it? Because it seems like every single how do we get them to use it more?
This is so great.
I think if we could integrate it into
I'm really hoping. So next year we're thinking that there might be more software like in classrooms, right? Like that we can sign them out and bring them into a classroom, right?
With the laptop cart.
So, but anyway, I'm hoping that because even. You know, we've even thought maybe we can go in a classroom and they can use their phones, but it's really too small, you know. So what we do is we pull every student to do a career interest test, so in school. So we give them their registration code and sign them on. So that's how we get them started. Then
what grade is that now? So
10th grade.
10th grade, I'm signed on.
And I know in 8th grade, Glenn also does like a career assessment too. And it does change, you know, it's different. And then in 11th grade, and we're still working on this, we like to have them do, it's called Do What You Are. And it's really about their personalities and the things they enjoy and what careers would match their interests of like who they are. Now, I couldn't do it because it didn't give me access to, because it's a fake
somebody.
Student.
Right.
But it's really, really interesting. And so if a student completes that Do What You Are, and we'll get to every junior to do that, because really, by the spring of their junior year, and then we start junior conferences and meeting with them, they should be exploring colleges. And Naviance really is a great way to do a college search, to explore. It has everything on it. So some students, yes, like, you know, your daughter used it probably a lot. There are some kids you'll see how often they use it. Eventually, when they're seniors, if they are applying to schools, they have to use it.
Do you get a report that says this kid's not signed on?
We can run a report like that, but I would say basically
everyone's
registered.
No, but registered.
How, usage, you want usage.
Oh, usage.
Yeah. Like, have they
we
registered?
Have a report about how much it is
how many times logged
yeah.
in. And it will say, like, the last time you logged in, just like a parent portal, you can kind of see when the last time a parent logged in.
Mm-hmm.
So teaching in high school, I know there is maturity. Like, they don't see it as real that they're going to college.
And they've changed so much. So if they do it so early, sometimes they all want to be, like, CSI investigators. You know, if you do it in, like, 9th and 10th grade, they think, like, CSI. Like, there's just a lot of that. So I think as we get a little bit more mature and they start seeing a little bit, you know, things change.
Right.
Academics change, interests change. Sometimes their interests will change.
I just always worry about, you know, certain kids are more mature younger.
Mm-hmm.
Certain kids are pushed harder by their parents. And I always worry about those kids that maybe aren't or aren't pushed to make sure that
And I think, like, now sometimes kids will also come in, and for a student who's like, I have no idea, or a parent calls up and is like, listen, 10th grade, 11th grade, whatever it is, that, you know, Johnny has no idea. I don't know what to do. I don't know where to go. You know, what can you do? We can put that. We have the college room accessible to us. We have the computer in there. And we've had students, like, we'll get them set up. And it is, like, 150 questions. So to sit with a student and do that is kind of a little archaic and, you know, weird, just to sit there and have them answer all of these personal questions about themselves. But we can put them in there, you know, with a friend and kind of make it, you know, do something.
And it goes
like
very
that.
Quick. It's very quick.
Mm-hmm. The college room seems to be used a lot.
It is, but unfortunately now, because of lack of room, there are a lot of other things going on in the room, which is, you know, it is what it is. So
hopefully the bomb will address something.
Yeah, if we could get into classrooms with technology, it would make it a lot easier. Because we can put this up on a screen, but if they're not doing it, it doesn't really mean anything to them.
Yeah.
So juniors. But then the big part of the junior year, I would say, is right now we're just starting all of our junior conferences. We already had our college information night. We're having a college fair in April.
during the school day, so there should be about 100 colleges coming April 5th between 10 and 11:30. I should be getting a list of the colleges that are coming, and I'll get the word out. You guys don't even know yet, but that'll be happening soon.
I skipped ahead. This is the next one. I didn't know if you were
And really, the junior conference, too, is where we always invite parents to come in, and that's where we discuss really the students' interests and what are they thinking and what do they need help with. Maybe make a list of schools and show them how to use Naviance and really how to do like the college match and the college search and all the statistics of that school. Also, admissions counselors come into our school very often, so we make announcements. If there's a way also in Naviance, if a student has ever put that into their, like under their name, we can actually see what students say was interested in Binghamton, and we can call down that student and say the representative from Binghamton will be here, so you can meet. And representatives really like to meet with students in like a room as opposed to just standing there. So we like to do that and kind of have them meet the representatives.
Do we ever use our vast amount of alumni? Like you mentioned Binghamton, and I can think a bunch of kids off the top of my head who went to Binghamton. And I think sometimes it might be easier, better, or just enhance if a student in our center just now spoke speaks to a former student who went to Binghamton. Do we have any of those connections?
It could be helpful. Not really, because then we'd like lose touch, and we don't know if they really graduated or.
We don't have like records of that. Like we don't have like a.
No, okay, we know where they
we
went.
We have a record of every teacher in the district, of what college they went to, who graduated and undergraduate.
We actually.
At least happened to that. That's not,
we know
not the
where,
graduates
yeah.
who've gone in there, but all of us. So if somebody's going to NYU, their counselor should have that. Be able to say, well, he went to NYU and.
No, I understand that, but
you're saying the graduates,
right? Because it's like somebody who went to Santa Maria.
We know where every student goes. But we don't always know if they finish or they transfer or we don't always know that. But we do know where they go. And in fact, I'll leave I have a folder of like of all the reports that Naviance that we can access. So what is really neat is that for last year's graduates and then this year's seniors, I ran a report that shows every college that a student had applied to. So that was last year and then this year, and it goes in alphabetical order by the college, and it lists their students' names. But then the students from last year, in bold, it actually shows where they attended. So we always enter that where they attended. Yeah, so we have for a few years now that we've used this.
Can we then have those, whether there be our teachers that are here or alumni students, meet people that are applying and write recommendations? I mean, I would assume a recommendation from an alumna.
So that happens sometimes, but not everyone, school has an alumni.
Sure.
But that's happened before. And sometimes students know, I mean, you guys pretty much, you might know where your teachers went to college, right? Some of them?
Some.
Well, it's matching the person you would know, too, because sometimes the students that come to me, I knew. Mm-hmm. And then they knew where I went, and they wanted to go there. That's one way. If you don't know me or don't know that, that's something that you as counselors, I'm assuming, would have to hook them up and say, well, you might not know Ms. Rayburn, but maybe she'd be willing to meet with you and look over your transcript and then eventually write a letter.
I had a young man who, I mean, Mr. Roy is here, so I'm going to make him blush, but did come down a little earlier in the year. Usually our junior conferences are we're just in, like, full swing now, and he's like, I really want to go to school to be a tech teacher. So, like, Mr. Roy told me X, Y, and Z. This is where I need to do. Like, tell me what I need to go and do. So, like, those connections, I think, are, like, very important making. And they do – we are small enough that that kid walked, left his room, came into my office, and we sat down and did, you know, every – kind of, like, planned out what he needs to do between now and then in terms of, like, lining that up for him. But those conversations happen.
When are applications due? Just as I'm looking at this for college, they're due.
We're still taking them.
January 1 is like your typical regular deadline.
January 1 of your senior year, you have to have everything in. So what do we do with regard to having kids that live here that decide, I want to look at these five schools? Do we do anything on the road, bus trips?
So we went to Stony Brook in the beginning of this year with our seniors and brought them there for the day and had a day of a tour. An admissions counselor spoke. We ate lunch.
Right.
And we're trying to plan to do something in the spring.
So how can we get that to be 20 schools? Like, I look at West Hampton, and I know that they have, I don't know exactly what it was, I looked at it a year ago, but they have bus trips, day trips in 10th or 11th grade, and overnight trips to a bunch of different schools. I don't know if you guys know what other schools are doing. But how can you grow that out?
Yeah, there are some schools that are. A lot aren't, some are, and that's certainly something that we were going to look into maybe going to New Paltz and Marist this spring. We need to do it soon. Figuring out
at
the time.
Is it a value add in your view? Like, if I'm a 16, 17-year-old kid, and I'm thinking, well, I'm going to go live somewhere for 4 years, mm-hmm. I think it would probably help to see it at the sun.
Well, you absolutely should be visiting.
Yeah.
Absolutely.
So yes. if you said, you know, I'm trying to find the words, but best-in-class guidance or best practice for guidance is to do what? Bus trips, to do overnight trips, if money were not an option.
To be honest, I think it's first like exploring some of the things that you think you may want. I think it's important to visit.
Right.
But I don't think it's one thing. I think it's like a combination.
I agree. It's like such a personal process. And I do think that, you know, a little bit of my hesitation to say like carte blanche, like let's go and like pack the bus out would be students that, you know, let's say we take them to a Marist and New Paltz, you know, those are pretty competitive schools, mm-hmm. and you know, to just giving them a sense of like private and public schools, I think is very important. But I think for some students, it could be a complete turnoff, and could be it really has to be. It's so personal mm-hmm. that I think seeing a university is so important. But I think for some students, seeing the right university is more important than seeing getting completely turned off.
I agree with that. I guess my concern is that I agree with that, and I understand. But I guess my concern is that we have a very, you know, so a diverse community, and there are certain parents that will take their kids to 30 schools and make sure they see it. And we have some that, for whatever reason, aren't as focused on doing that. And I feel like because it's important, like you said, to get to the schools, are we doing enough to make sure that those kids whose parents aren't doing it are getting the same?
No, I don't think it's that they not in some their focus. Some that might not be able to.
I didn't use the right.
No,
words.
I know that, but I want to add to that.
Thank you.
But right now, Senator Richards goes to a SUNY school, visits on a bus. They go to a private school. They've gone to Sacred Heart University. Mm-hmm. They plan to go to Marist. So I watch this every year, right? Mm-hmm. So they have specific types of schools that they show the group. And now you're wondering, which is a good question, is should we take the, you know, just those specific types of schools and make more trips, make it 20 trips, you know?
More trips or, I don't know. I mean, that's what I asked. Yeah. If you looked at the best practice of a school that's doing it, it seems like you say it's a value add. I'd just be interested, you know, if you could take a look and come back and tell us, here's what these others do, and we think this would help. And
I mean, it certainly can't hurt.
Here's what it would cost, and then we can figure it out.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and then pulling them out of classes. That's the other thing.
And sports.
And then overnight.
There's a lot of hurdles. But you said at the very beginning, your goal is to figure out the best for the kid post-secondary, you know, education, and this is part of it. And, you know, maybe there are small groups. I don't know.
Right.
I'd be interested to know what other schools do in that realm.
Right. Okay. So I would say, though, it's hard to say how often we meet with students, but for many students, by the time it's like mid-senior year, we have met that student, I mean, it could be 20 times, it could be.
And if I'm not in the office, Ms. Marino's not there, Ms. Hessian, can you answer a question? We're so interchangeable, Mr. Mack students, like whoever is there to get a question answered, you know, whether they need to call an admissions counselor or anything else, I think by that point, their senior year, they feel like they, you know, our wallpaper in there. And they'll just come in, and I think they're pretty comfortable talking to any of us.
And they really have to see us in order to apply, because they fill out a transfer request form, and then what we do is we, through Naviance, we're sending, you know, their letters of recommendation that their teachers have uploaded into the system, their transcript, there's mid-year reports to complete. And I don't know if you want to see more what Naviance does. I don't know what the time allows, you know, in terms of, you know, a student looking into a college. I don't know if you want to look into that at all. But.
Yeah, I mean, if you have 5 minutes and you want to show it, I think it's an interesting program.
Because it really does. And again, I have a folder that I'll leave with you that shows all the colleges that all of our students have applied to.
Want to go to school?
Okay, so if you, you know what, if you pull up, let's pull up, I forget what colleges are under Penelope, but if you pull up her colleges, but not under EDUX because it's
under
not,
Family Connection.
Yeah.
So this matches the...
So every student, this is the page that the student sees. Mm-hmm. So if you go to colleges, yeah, here we go.
So these are colleges that have the majors that met right. with what she was interested in.
Right. So
small, there's like lots of different...
Right. So, you know, I picked as Penelope Binghamton College of New Jersey, University of Scranton, SUNY Geneseo. So I was thinking more like sciences. So what's really neat is if you click on Binghamton. So, and if you scroll down a little bit. So Penelope, her GPA is about a 90. Usually that's about that's a weighted GPA. And Binghamton is showing that what they're looking for is about a 97 weighted. The combined SAT... And that's the two parts. The 1600 is the two parts. Penelope has right now an 1150, but Binghamton is really looking for about a 1235. So that kind of could, you know, then as Penelope, I'm looking like, wow, I really have to, you know, I have to really work on my SATs or ACTs. And then what we can look at under application history, if you just point to that, Nina. Mm-hmm. So we can look, what's really neat is that last year, we had 10 students apply to Binghamton, 7 were admitted, and 3 enrolled. So every year that we've used this now, we can really see how many of our students were accepted to Binghamton. And then if you just want to show, Nina, under admissions. So what's really good is that every school has this, so it's very easy to look up SAT scores for every school, acceptance rate. So if you look up under where it says freshmen to the right, that is for Binghamton. So they received 28,000 applications last year, and then they accepted
12,500.
So their acceptance rate is 44%. And then, if you look, they show you what the ACT, what they're looking for, like your typical freshman who's accepted, their average ACT score is a 28. And then they did the 3 combined SAT score. No, they didn't. Actually,
no, they break
the critical
it down,
reading,
too. Yeah.
They were looking for a 630, critical, you know, SAT math, 660. So at least this gives, like, a quick look to see really what kind of SAT score this the school is looking for. And then if you go back up top, it'll show, come down a little bit lower, I'm sorry. So where it says majors and degrees, that shows all the majors that Binghamton has. It'll show also if it has a master's in that program. And student life would show you the clubs that the school has, what division sports they have. So it's really, you know, a very quick way for students to just look up the quick statistics of a school. You can visit the website right from here. So it's a really great tool. And also you can do a college search on this as well.
So how do the scholarships work? Where does that piece come in?
So also, so that's actually I have that in my last, like, PowerPoint. Because this is really not answered, but a little bit more about the college piece. Okay. So can you just pull up the statistics? I'm sorry. Okay.
I'm sorry.
So
this one, right?
Through Naviance, because I looked back, so we started keeping track of students and what they're reporting to us about, you know, most of the money that really students are getting is really from the schools themselves, because it's really an enormous amount of money. So what we did was, and I have, like, in this packet, there are some student examples of this year about the kind of packages that they earned. So, for instance, one student, say that she applied to, like, 3 different schools, and she got into Fairfield. Fairfield is giving her $25,000 per year off of the tuition.
Based on her performance in high school.
Exactly. So I kind of have some examples of that. So in 2013, which is really when we started keeping track of all of this, there were when I say 73, it doesn't mean 73 students per se. It means it could have been one student who had four different packages, but we kind of added that up to be 840,000. And of course, that's an estimate. This is what students are reporting to us, but most of them are pretty accurate.
So why has it gone up? Why is it doubled?
Because number one, we're paying more attention to it. So now, when a student comes in, and you know, we talk all about, okay, what are we going to do? What are your decisions here? So I actually just submitted an article to Mr. Soto about Guy Cerruti. So he doesn't mind me talking about this. So he's trying to decide whether he should go to Loyola Maryland, where I think he got $18,000 a year. Off the price. Manhattan College, which they gave him $25,000 per year, or one other school. So these are the things that we're talking about to make it more affordable for them. So
and that's done at the application process. Mm-hmm. So by January 1st, that.
So he had applied, and he, I would say, maybe in February, March was when he was learning about all these scholarship opportunities. So, and there really is, it really is. Especially when students report to us, like, exactly what's going on. But if they're, like, a pretty decent student, and not even, you know, necessarily amazing SAT scores, but a lot of it is the community service, mm-hmm. the things that they can say that they were involved in, anything to do with leadership, really is a lot of money to be had.
When we talked last year, we had a board meeting, we talked about SAT prep courses and raising mm-hmm. the bar, and one of the things that we heard back in the community was, yeah, but it's expensive. We can't always afford it. So how do you take that 1.6 and then in 2017-18 take that to 2.5? What steps do you take to do that?
I think, too, that by really learning, say, what this student was able to earn this amount of money from this college, well, now we have, like, a baseline. So now the next student that comes in that could have a similar transcript, similar resume, we say, you know what, maybe you should apply to, there are some schools that we know will give more money. So we might say, okay, you know, you can apply to Quinnipiac, but Quinnipiac is not really known to give a lot of money. You're welcome to apply there. But if you want to really play it safe and, you know, yes, you should apply to a SUNY school, but you know what, we're thinking, well, you know, Aaron Schuster got into the honors program at Fairfield University and got $25,000 a year to make that more affordable. Well, let's look into Fairfield then. So it kind of gives you, you know, sort of like the statistics to really help us along.
To have the conversation that while money's important, you know, you may be able to get to the same place,
yes.
and perhaps a better school if we follow right. this scholarship track.
Right. I mean, a big conversation that I have, like, in our junior conference, I think it's a bit much because we could go on for hours at, like,
yeah.
length about the college application process, what we could do. But by the time they're seniors and really have a narrowed down list, I mean, that's when we start talking about, like, return on investment and what you're really looking at and employability and what these schools are offering. So in terms of, like, career preparation, internships that are a part of programs that aren't just summer programs, because kids come home in the summer and they work for money to go back to college.
Right.
So we need them to go to colleges that offer that they are responsible to going to internships. So, like, making them see all of those pieces, I think, are really important. And really working with our families to say, you know, that when these kids come in with letters and say, you know what, like, my first choice is Marist, or, you know, is whatever the school may be, but they only gave me $10,000 a year, you know, talking to them, and that's something that we do discuss at our college night, like writing to those colleges and asking for them and learning how to advocate for themselves and say, you know what, like, you might have offered this money and that's great, but we're a family on Long Island, my mom and dad work, and laying out the whole thing, and you'll be surprised at how much money
mm-hmm.
comes back, and it, you know, it's colleges are a business, so if we teach them to treat it like a business and negotiate a little bit about it, you know, while it's your heart and soul,
I think we can probably help them.
We do help them do that. No, we do 100% do, and I think that's part of it. It's just, you know, it's hard, and telling parents that and communicating that to parents, I think, is really important, because at this point, you know, you've had, you know, Johnny's a senior, and it's your heart and soul. Your baby's going off to college, and you don't think of it as a business. You see it as, like, this life-changing experience going off to school. So I think that is part of what we do communicate to our families, is that, you know, yes, it's a business. Yes, it is all of those wonderful, you know, life events, but it's also a business, and we can treat... That's how, you know, that's when you start talking money with them.
So we'll be able to get to 2.5 and 17.
Sure.
And then the last on the screen is really, other resources as to how students can get money. So there are the local scholarships that are coming out now, and that's really through the community. Naviance also has a whole scholarship website as part of it, which lists every scholarship imaginable. I mean, do most students do that? Probably not, because it's a lot of work. But there is a way that they can put their criteria in, and then matches them to scholarships. Through anything that comes through our guidance office, we print out a newsletter that's in our guidance office, and everything is on the guidance e-board.
Do we meet with the parents and the kid together ever?
We invite the parents to come in.
But is it a bunch of parents in a room, or is it you and the parents?
They're individual appointments.
And you show them Naviance and explain the way it works?
Naviance College Board.
And I just had, we just had College Information Night. To be honest, we didn't have, an amazing turnout, not that we would have liked. And I had a representative from SUNY Oneonta and UMass at Lowell.
Does that mean, 15 families? What was the turnout?
Probably about 25.
I'd say, 20.
25 families.
25 adults.
25 parents. 16.
One.
No,
yeah,
25 total.
25.
I would say.
Yeah.
25 people.
Yes.
So how do we do better there to get more people interested and to come out?
I do Connect Ed. Yeah. I send a letter home. It's on the school calendar.
When parents call and say, I've had parents frantic, especially with the new SAT that's turned over this year, what are we doing about that? We went to all the English classrooms to tell them about that, and in some of the communication of just how do I get them registered for this, I'm like, a lot of this will be addressed at that night.
I didn't put this in here, I had a night in the beginning of the year, how the SAT is changing, and I had the Huntington Learning Center come in, and maybe we had 15.
So, this is it. If you look at everything that we do and looking at scores and how can we do better and looking at graduation statistics and AP, AP advanced regents graduation, raising the numbers, if we're not doing every single thing here, I don't want to say all that's for naught, but it all leads to this. Where are we going? How are we doing? How are we?
But to be honest, I was just a little bit negative.
Yeah.
But to be honest, I'm thinking of this senior class, and, a lot of them are going to great places and apply to great schools and are doing great things and, got a lot of, great scholarship awards. And so there are a lot of kids who are still, really achieving.
Well, I'm not saying they were not at all, so don't take what I'm saying. I'm saying, it's every conversation I have is we're doing great, how can we do better?
Right.
You talk about pushing in the class, are you pushing in as well, because meeting students, mm-hmm. You said you pushed in for SATs?
We pushed into classrooms to talk about the SATs, Mrs. Hessian, went into the English classrooms to make sure to our juniors to see since the SAT was turning over, to making sure that they had the opportunity to sign if they wanted to take the old SAT, which is now not an option, to go in and sign up for those, to register. We have kids coming down. I had a kid in my office the other day just trying to register them for a test.
You push in for other reasons too into the classrooms?
We push in throughout the year. And we try to balance it between the departments so we're not overwhelming social studies or, one subject area, English. We kind of push in throughout the year, whether it be for scheduling or for scholarship packets or SATs. Talking about scheduling preparation,
You push in the classes for scholarship.
I'm doing that either Friday or Monday.
What do you do?
So every senior will be handed a packet of all the local scholarships that exist, the deadlines, the criteria, the application.
What's a local scholarship?
So, for instance, Mr. Gilley, he has a scholarship.
I didn't sew it to you. I knew exactly what
you beat up tonight.
And that just started last year. But basically, every senior will be handed the information as to what
community scholarship, mm-hmm.
the community scholarship.
So I'm a senior. Every single senior will know about it, scholarship in their hand, and you speak to them as well.
And
as
we
a class.
Post it outside the board.
Yep. You post it outside.
And hand student every packet.
Oh, you're going to be reading a lot this year.
Yeah,
I hope so too.
There's a lot of scholarships.
There are a lot.
I was looking online in the website.
There are. And again, and then, we're forgetting about the last thing that I put on there was throughout the year, there are a lot of nomination scholarships. But it might be something that it says the guidance office has to nominate a student, maybe who is, like, I'm thinking of Avery Hoda. I don't even know how we came up with this, because so something came across our desks. I think it came to you, Russ, and it was, you know, nominate a student to Fred Beal, and somehow I said, well, I know everything that this kid does. You know, but again, this was just individual meetings. He mentioned he's very humble. He's not a big standout kid, and he just, I know he was working towards his Eagle Scout, and he's involved in robotics, and the more we talked, he was just very impressive. So we had to nominate a student, so we ended up nominating him, and then he was put up to, like, the next level. And so I just helped him complete this, like, very crazy application. It's a presidential scholars application scholarship. And we don't really know what the reward can be, but it was very lengthy. And so he's saying that he, you know, he should hear soon. But I'm saying, like, sometimes we don't know.
Yeah, sometimes you hear from people, only three people apply for the scholarship, and it's $3,000. And I have only three kids from the senior class. Why do you think
they
attribute that to?
Today I had two girls who... I mean, it's easy to talk to... For me, it's easier to talk to teenage girls sometimes because they'll, you know, we can...
Sure.
Yeah, you know. And so I saw them in the hallway and she's kind of giving me a look, and I see them, like, looking at the scholarship board that we have outside. And I was like, you have to do the community scholarship. I'm like, you have to do this. And she's been in the office and we've called her colleges about it. And she's like, what do I have to do for that? She's like, I have to come in for an interview. She's like, I'm not doing that. I'm like, you are doing that. You're coming and doing that. You know, I told three other... adults in the building who are also a part of the scholarship community program, the community scholarship. And, you know, she's like, I have to write an essay. I'm like, we'll help you write an essay. You told, you know, a cooperating teacher, the student will be writing this essay this period, and she has to do this. And, you know, it's notoriously given out with money. And her friend, who I don't really know as well, was standing there, and I was like, and you get one too, and you'll be doing it together. So, you know, misery loves company. You're both writing an essay's third period tomorrow, you know, with the teacher, and that's what's going on.
And are the parents interested? You meet with them that junior year, and I know that's the big conference, so you
right.
meet with them. When
right.
you talk about scholarships to parents, what kind of feeling in the community do you get? They want to know all of them? Do they want them all? They say, thank you very much. We'll look into that.
I think that they would rather rely on their own child to do it, and I think they get maybe frustrated because not all kids are going crazy completing all these applications. Maybe the local scholarships, they're more apt to do that. But
I also feel by this time they feel like they've
just
crossed the finish line. Like,
yeah,
they are in where
done.
They're going, and, like, you know, writing essays for every single
and
application
everyone.
Sometimes
yeah.
sometimes can just be a daunting task. They're like, I just want, you know, like, I've done this already. So I'm like, writing is for the rest of your life, so you just get used to writing them.
Do we have some breakdown to that point in the scholarship? Do we have some breakdown as to when, like, percentage of kids, when they go, are they taking out loans? Are parents paying in this community? Do we know?
No.
We don't know.
It's a very personal conversation.
Very personal.
Yeah.
You know, I'm even thinking of a student last year, towards the end of the year. Mm-hmm. She definitely knew she was going to Suffolk. And she downloaded every scholarship that Suffolk offers, because that's the other thing that we tell students is it's not, you know, go to the school's website and look up all of their scholarships. Sometimes it's just a matter of, okay, if you have a 92 average and if you have an 1100 SAT, you get this amount of money. But sometimes it's an additional scholarship. So she downloaded, I've never seen anyone do this before.
She was determined to get Suffolk paid for. She was like, I'm not paying
and
to go there.
And she had it all paid for. Applied for every scholarship. I had to sign off on. I don't even know what I was signing off on. But she did it. She was determined. So there is, and she did it all on her own. Her parents didn't do it. So there is, you know, there are resources. But a lot of the bulk of the money really comes from the schools.
Yeah.
But there are a lot of ways for them to look that up.
Do you mind if I ask a student? I'm just curious about, because you were asking something about seeing your counselor. Do you go to your counselor a lot? Not that often.
Right.
I mean, you're obviously very, I'm sure you do great classes and never
no
have
pressure,
a problem
guys,
with anything.
Here.
But I'm just curious if a student would mind me asking, do you see your counselor once a month, once a year?
I stop by maybe, just this week, I stopped by like three times.
Okay.
Yeah. Because that the same like college questions that I just get some like, sometimes I panic. Sometimes, although I shouldn't. But, you know, I just like random questions like, how would I know the difference between like an Ivy League college and like a, just a public college, like a state college, and doesn't really matter if like my GPA was a 95 rather than like a 97, you know, something along the lines of that.
So this week you stopped down three times. Today's Wednesday.
And what grade are you in?
I'm in 11th.
Yeah, I'm a couple times this week.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I can personally say I've worked with Mrs. Mariano. She is, I've countless, many times I've seen her. She's worked with me, helped me get through, see what we can do to further my education and to challenge from tests. Really helps me boost my resume and all these things. I've probably seen her like 20 times, 30 times in the past like a couple weeks.
Yeah, that's okay. I get that feeling. That's what I want to know. Would the rest of you want to say anything or counsel us?
I know a lot in the beginning of the year, almost every year I've got my own schedule, like, but can I change this? Can I, like, get different classes? And I'm always able to go to the guidance office and be like, can I get into, like, this? Like, I don't want to be in the Regents class, can I be in an honors class? I don't want to be in the Regents class, can I be in an AP class? And they're always very accepting, like, yes, we'll make this happen.
Do you ever feel like, yeah, I have to make an appointment? One thing Ms. Sessions said I found funny is we have an appointment book, and apparently we're supposed to, but people pop in, and I've heard that before. So do you have to make an appointment? Do you feel like you have to wait till a week to see, you know?
Not at all.
No, okay, I don't care. No, I just... No. I mean,
you can usually just walk in.
They're putting out a schedule for appointments.
Yeah. And have you seen...
Email.
Will you see another counselor? Like, if yours is not there, would you go to somebody else? You would.
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah. That's nice to hear. That's great. Thank you. Just go. Sorry.
There are always things that we can do and learn more. And like, we haven't really had a college fair in a while. So I thought, you know what, let's do this. And let's really have, you know, for the students, you know.
And how many colleges are coming to that?
At least 100.
So you have over 100 colleges going to come to Center Ridge School District. Are other school districts allowed to bring their kids here? No.
So that's we're not inviting them.
We're not inviting. There's exclusively, exclusively Center Ridge students that day. Yeah. And they get to meet. And how often, because I do know, I see all the college reps there in the school.
They're here a lot.
Which I find amazing. I don't know if that's a relationship you have with them. How often is that happening where a college rep is actually sitting there and you announce it today?
Sometimes there are three a day.
You say Lafayette's here, Bucknell's here, and you know, Loyola's here today. If you want to meet with them, you can
come
down.
And we post it outside the guidance.
We announce it in the mornings. We announce during lunch periods. We announce it at, like, how to get there.
And the student comes down, just ask that personal question. Anybody get accepted right there on the spot in your school?
We do on-site.
On-site?
Yeah, we do on-site admission.
We've done on-site admissions.
But those are more than
worked with.
Like a Hofstra or something like that. You'll be more of an
on-site. Hofstra will come from the commute.
Do we tie in at all with sports such that, you know, if we've got kids that are looking at specific schools, do you manage that, or is that more on the AD side, coach side?
I think Jeremy really was managing that, mostly.
There's a lot of paperwork with NCAA.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. There's very specific paper, because my older sons
to be eligible.
Went through...
You need that crossover, right? That sports crossover plus what do you want to do when
you... guys at the
sure.
end.
Yeah. Right.
Yeah, it was coordinated, because that is another whole other
right.
element.
Right, it is.
So you coordinate with Jeremy on that. Thank you very much.
Thank you so much.
Any other questions?
No, you guys are great.
Thank
you so much.
Thank you.
Okay, so we got the shorter presentations over. Now we have the much longer and a very interesting presentation by Ms. Carol Perkins. And it's all yours, Ms. Perkins. Perkins has been a trooper. She's done this all with one hand for the last week and a half. She can text and type and be on the phone at the same time.
She's a little slow texting.
Okay. With this, of course, the texting's not up to speed, but everybody else, you know, you can wait 3 or 4 seconds to get the packages.
Okay. Tonight
is the fourth presentation for the 2016-17 budget. And tonight, the focus is going to be on the tax cap and the revenue projected for 2016-17. So to start off with, we're going to look at the history of the tax cap, or what we call the tax transportation, things like that. You'll see, the first of all, the tax cap began in the year 2012-13. And you'll see the first line, and this is this works. No, it doesn't require us. First line, you have, this is the actual calculation of the tax levy. And you'll see that it varies from year to year. Starting in 2012-13, it was 2.95. 13-14, it went down to 2.48. 14-15, it went even lower to 1.18. And in 15-16, it increased to 4.21. Now, when you have a tax cap limit, you can go out with that percentage. However, the board reviews the information, and you'll see on the second line that the board proposed and the voter approved sometimes a tax levy that is different than the actual calculation. And for the most part, it's lower. One year it was equal to the tax cap. So you can see in the year 2012, the calculated tax cap was 2.95%, and the board presented a 2%. 13-14, 2.48, they presented a 2.39. And 14-15, it was 1.18, and they went out with the same rate. And 15-16, it was 4.21, and they went out with a 1.3% tax cap, tax levy. And then the bottom line just shows you, even though the estimate was, say, in 2012-13, the estimated tax rate increase is 2%, has to be remembered that the school district does not set the tax rate. The town sets the tax rate. We just have what we estimate it to be, but there's a number of factors that go into a tax rate, including assessments. If the assessments go up, your tax rate goes down. So you'll see that in 2012, the assessments went up. Tax rate went down. Rather than 2%, it was 0.91. In 2013-14, it was a little bit higher than the estimated tax rate, and that was due to a decrease in assessments. 2014-15, there was actually no increase in the tax rate at all, and 15-16 was about 1.17%. So overall, over 4 years, the tax rate has only gone up about 1.17%. So we've gone over this, but
1.17% per year,
on average.
On average, average, taking into account the 4 years, 1.17.
Yeah.
Okay.
Just 1 year after.
Well, you had a zero.
The only one.
I didn't want to point that out, but I didn't. You know.
Point that out. You know.
You
want
to play?
Sure. You gotta get you.
Good for you. Okay. When there's so much confusion about the tax cap, everyone thinks when you discuss a tax cap, it has to be 2%. And it's not 2%. It could be above 2%, or below 2%, it could be 2%. But there's a calculation that goes into preparing the tax cap. And the tax cap is directed by New York State law. We have to follow certain steps in the calculation, and every school district is required to submit it to the state controller by March 1st, and then the state controller reviews the calculation. You have to have supporting documentation for every step of your calculation, and if they ever have any questions, then they get back to you. So why does it vary? Every school district has a different calculation. This past Monday in Newsday, they listed all the tax caps of every district. And you can see some are negative, some were above 1.0. They just vary. And it's because of certain things that go into the calculation of the tax cap. One being is that the New York State law allows for there's an allowance for new construction. So, say in Seminole Ridges is a lot of new construction. So, they call it the growth factor. That's calculated into the formula. Another allowance is for capital exclusions. Any of your debt service that's included in your budget is part of, is included in the calculation. They back it out the prior year, and then they add back the new debt service for the upcoming school year. Another exclusion is the pension exclusion. We have our TRS, Teachers Retirement System, employer contribution, and ERS, Employer Retirement System contribution. If it exceeds 2%, the growth of 2%, then you can take that into account. And past this year, last year, it hasn't increased by 2%, so right now we're not taking that into account. And then the last is what affects our school district is the adjustment for the CPI. And that's why you'll see a lot of school districts with a very low tax cap this year because of the CPI. On the bottom, you'll say, okay, 2% is not 2%. Some years the CPI is greater. 2013-14 was actually 2%. CPI in 14-15 was 1.46, 15-16 1.62, and this year it was 0.12%. So there, by having it quite at 0.12%, it's really not that much growth. And if you don't take into account the exclusions, there's not much growth in the tax levy. So now, this is the actual calculation, and I just want to focus on certain areas. The first number that you start off with your prior tax levy, that would be your 2015-16 tax levy. And what's important for Centerville Riches is the tax base growth factor of 1.0215, over 2%. And that is what I was talking about before, new construction. There's growth in the school district, and the formula takes that into account because you usually have additional costs if you have new construction. And so the growth factor is 1.02. And then, from that formula, you back out your capital tax levy, your capital tax exclusions, and then to that, you multiply the CPI of 0.12%. And that gives you the tax levy limit before exclusions of $21,307,000. And then you start focusing on the exclusions. You start adding them back. And you take the tax levy before the exclusions, and then you add back the capital exclusion of $844,993, and then to that, and that's it, because there wasn't any, the TRS, the ERS wasn't over 2%. And we come up with a tax levy limit of $22,152,000, and it equates to a tax cap of 2.39%. Now, included in the tax cap of 2.39%, you'll see that the capital exclusion, capital exclusion looks at your debt service, and then you have to back out your building aid. But also included in that is a...
What does that mean, debt service?
Debt service means it's your interest and your principal on your bonds. And this year, we've also, in 16-17, we included interest for bond anticipation note for the capital project.
So in that 818-633,
mm-hmm. that's our
right. For this year that gets backed out.
Yes, for 15-16,
okay.
That gets backed out.
So where does the interest in the debt service less building aid that you're adding back in, the 844-993?
Yes.
That includes interest on short-term debt for the capital project that's been voter approved.
That is correct.
So, and how much is that approximately?
$75,000.
So there's $75,000. We're allowed to have a higher tax cap, the amount of $75,000, whatever percentage that equals, to cover interest for the voter-approved bond to do the work that we're going to start
yes.
doing.
Yes, it equates to about 0.35%.
So, I don't know if I'm jumping. I'm just flipping through your thing.
No, you're right.
So... if I ask the question, Carol, of this point 2.39, what percentage is programmatic, i.e. back out 75,000?
Right.
What percentage is programmatic? Because our goals...
2.04.
Okay, so our goals from... Do you remember what the goals were that we had for tax increase? It was 1.5%, and then an additional 0.5% if it was used for programmatic growth to get us to the 2%. And then we said, well, everybody might not know that it's 2%, so it'll be 1.99, so we're still below. So while this says 2.39...
2.04
is programmatic.
That is correct.
0.35 is the bond that's already been approved.
That's correct.
Right. Got it. Okay.
This is just another way of looking at it, coming up with the same number, but rather than the chart, it shows you, again, your tax base growth factor. You back out your debt service, less your building aid. You add back, you multiply your CPI, and then add back your debt service less your building aid. And again, it comes up to 2.39. Okay. So this is just an overview of what we saw before, and then we added another column for 2016-17. The tax cap limitation calculation is 2.39%, and currently we are proposing a 2.39%. But again, this is early. In the budget process, it could change, but right now it's 2.39%.
So the way that we would talk through that is, if we had a zero, let's assume it was a zero for a second, that 75,000 would come out of our budget, yet the commuters already approved it. Mm-hmm. So it would basically mean we've approved the bond issuance, but we've got to cut the program to pay for it. It doesn't make sense.
Right.
So that gets you to your 0.34. So the question then for the board is, I think, I don't know if we're at this stage yet to ask the question.
We're going
to
be hitting the expenses as we move forward, but the question is to the board, I think, do you want to, because this will go online, if you want, Ms. Perkins can specify that, right? Because I would want to know if I was...
It's got to be broken out, yeah.
Yeah, 0.35 of that is the band,
right?
The band, right? So it's that, and it's just interest on the capital project that's been approved by the board.
Right.
So could we put that in that box and maybe something on the bottom so the board...
Sure.
As you move forward, you're going to make a decision. Mm-hmm. But I think we're not, we're almost there. We're probably 2 weeks away because you weren't going to see the whole picture before you make any decision.
But I want to make sure that we're in line with the goals of
correct.
1.5 for programmatic increases, salary, not programmatic increases,
right.
Typical
right.
budgetary increases, salaries, et cetera.
Right.
And then the half is growth. What are we doing? How are you spending that money for growth?
Which we discussed at the last presentation.
Yep.
Yeah.
Yes.
Okay. But I think it would be helpful here in this, you know.
Yeah. I can break it up.
Report, yes.
No problem.
Yeah, when it goes online, just to, so
yes.
it's
so people understand.
Right.
Yes.
Because I think we're going to get the question, and I don't know if anybody's got it in their head. Well, why is, you know, Carol's done a great job, I think, explaining it, but why is 2% not 2%? Mm-hmm. You know, and I think it's important to note the 2% is just so that for voter majority approval. You can always go. The 2.39, you can go above with a 60%.
No.
Over
2.39 only requires the 50% plus one.
Majority approval.
That's correct. Over that. If you went to a 2.4,
okay, sorry.
If you went to a 2.4, you would need 60% of the community to come out. So I think that that's important. We're under, at 2.39 we're under, we'll likely be slightly below that if we match our goals.
Right.
Correct.
And that will then require a simple majority.
And again, like say, if you looked at Newsday, you looked at all the districts. A lot of the districts had a very low tax cap calculation. But again, because of the growth from new construction in the school district, that 2% in growth represents that 2.39%.
Thank you.
Yeah, moving on to revenue. Now, in the past, before the tax cap, when we were developing the budget, usually it was the expense side of the budget that drove the tax rate. But now with the tax cap, it's the revenue that drives the budget because we only have so many revenue sources and we're pretty much capped at the tax levy. So whatever we come up with in revenue, and you kind of back into your expenses, the expenditure side of the budget. So for 2016-17, the total revenue right now is estimated at $41,024,282. Now the revenue is comprised of several components, the first being state aid. Right now, we're looking at an increase of $168,000 in state aid. However, it is subject to change once the budget is cast and there's legislative input.
So is that our gap elimination catch-up plus increase or not? Or is it just the increase?
Well, it's going to be an increase, and it can be gap elimination. There's one way they can do it. They can do it in foundation aid. Okay. The question is on April 1st, when hopefully we have that number, and that's why you'll wait a little bit. We'll know April 1st.
Most so this now is the governor's number.
This is the governor's proposal.
Correct.
It's based upon our expenditures. It's based upon foundation aid, building aid, things like that.
And every year, last few years, once the legislature, it's
usually
increased.
Higher, right?
Yes.
But this year, it seems like the focus is on the gap elimination adjustment, and our school district only has about $50,000 left. Other districts have a larger amount. My association, there's been discussions about foundation aid, but if you read things online, no one's talking about foundation aid. We're due foundation aid. And so hopefully they're looking at both, and they're trying to make it equitable between all districts rather than one district getting $5 million to close their gap, and we're only getting $50,000. Maybe they'll look at foundation aid and make it a little bit more equitable.
Or maybe when GEA is totally off the table, they'll really look at foundation aid and do what they've been supposed to do for a long time with the CFE decision and the equity. So it may not be this year, but maybe if they get the GEA. I'm hoping too, but if the GEA is totally off and we never have to talk about it,
we can
just concentrate on what really needs.
We only have 8,000 left, so we don't have much. Maybe next year we'll leave it on. Or this year. Anyway, so that's it's increasing by $168,000 based upon the numbers that we have as of today. Then the next component is tuition. We receive tuition from three sources: the East Meridian students, the Native American students, and our special ed program. And right now we're looking at an increase in tuition of $212,000. We're receiving additional revenue for Native American in our special ed program. However, the East Meridian's tuition, that the increase is offset by a decrease in that. And the reason being is that we have a very large graduating class, over 30 students, and we only have about 15 students replacing them. So that's why there's a decrease in East Meridian's tuition.
How certain are we with this number based on additional Native American and special ed? Is this a pretty tight number?
Right now, everything changes, but right now it's a good number.
Yeah. I'll tell the board, today I received the contract from New York State for the next 5 years for the Pusputa on the Unkajang Nation.
Oh, good.
So that we're really thankful for that. We work very closely with Chief Wallace as well as the state, and that came in today. You'll be getting it the update on Friday.
How do the tuition increases go there?
I'll put that on the board agenda. You have to approve that at our next meeting.
Go ahead, Carol. How do the tuition increases in that contract go year over year?
The tuition is based on Seneca Falls, and it's calculated a little bit differently in Seneca Falls in that it takes into account building aid also.
Okay.
So it's the rate is a little bit higher than the Seneca Falls.
So is it? Does it go up kind of in line with the ability that we've got to increase taxes or no? Follow what I'm asking.
The Seneca is based upon what you've spent and what you receive in state aid. It's very little.
Very complicated. Yeah.
Yeah, and last year we had a very low. We had a reduction in our budget to budget, so our rate didn't go up.
Right.
We had anticipated. So it varies from year to year. And also depends on the student population. Okay, There's no change in interest on investments, and health contracts remains the same. And then we have other income. There's an increase of $52,000. I really took a hard look at the different types of income that we receive in that category. And parentally placed, each year we've been receiving more in parentally placed revenue, so I increased it for that and other sources of income. So overall, there's an increase of $52,000. Other reserves, this year, 15-16, we applied $121,852 from the employer retirement contribution reserve. And this year we're going to be doing the same. And applied fund balance, last year we applied 1.2, for 15-16 we applied 1.2, and we're going to do that again. We're proposing to do it again for this year, 1.2. And to balance out the total revenue, we have our tax levy, and that's the 2.39 I discussed.
Carol, we created a maintenance repair line as well in the budget?
Right now, there is not.
There's no maintenance repair line in the budget, or there's no capital reserve in the budget?
There is no, right now, we do not have a line item. We could, but we don't have a line item for a transfer to repair reserve.
To a repair reserve.
That's right.
Okay.
Do we have it in the emergency repair? Maybe I'm not asking the right question.
No.
I thought we had at some point, we'll take it offline, but I thought we had a surplus in one particular category that we were going to transfer into a maintenance reserve.
Here it comes. Go ahead.
We have a repair reserve.
Good. Yes.
Okay. We have a repair reserve. Last year we funded the repair reserve. This year, when we end the year, if we have a surplus over and above what we have included in the budget right now,
we could put it in there, but how much do we have now? Because that's what I wasn't keying in. I know you put money in there, and I have the names wrong. I apologize. You're very technical there, Ms. Perkins. But we put more money in because our surplus was very good this year, right? But you put money in there, and I thought you put a substantial amount of money in there, but maybe I'm wrong about that. But you off the top of your head, you don't know.
We discussed putting $250,000 from another reserve into that account.
Okay, well, you'll look. We can get back to the board on that. Maybe we'll shoot in the update on Friday, the amount we have, and our maintenance.
Sure.
Thank you.
Okay. And then last but not least is with a 2.39% tax levy increase, how does it equate to taxes? So with an average household, average assessment, right now in 2015-16, the tax bill would be a little over $7,000. If you add the 2.39% to that, using current year's assessment, because we don't know what next year's assessment is going to be, the increase would be $168.74 for total taxes estimated for 2016-17 of $7,229.
When we look at that average household for school taxes, school taxes make up about 70% of the total tax bill?
68?
So you're talking somebody that the average household pays about $9,700 a year in taxes. Okay.
And I know I just received my check from the New York State tax agent.
Yes.
So,
and
well, is that continued on this year?
What'd you get?
The check for the property tax.
There's another. They're looking at something a little bit different than getting a check like that for the next year.
We've met the requirement so far twice.
Right.
So
keep
we all have
so
far.
Tax
we plan to continue. They are changing how they're. I think to try to give an incentive to the certain community groups.
Yes.
So they're changing who's going to get what. So the formula is changing a little bit. We're still going to adhere, we believe, to everything so that the community does get it.
What they're talking about is a one-time rebate that was offered if we
two times for last year and then for this
year, but not aggregate, just the increased amount. You got a rebate
back so that it was truly in that 1 year a zero to you if you did what?
So
the cost savings over 5 years.
Everyone, I haven't got mine though, so I don't know what happened to it. I think it's lost.
Somebody threw their ballot up. Right?
Yeah.
If the district stayed within the cap, we receive a tax credit, and I'm sure it must have been.
But it was more than that.
And
it wasn't just staying within the cap. You had to have cost reduction.
We gave a plan.
You had to improve cost efficiencies, which we did over and above.
Working with the neighborhood schools around us, we had to show that we got together with them, and there was some cost savings by utilizing certain, you don't remember the whole form we had to do, Carol?
Right, there were a couple of years ago now.
Yeah, it was, I guess. And I'll send that to the board. Yeah.
One thing happens. But it's a good point, though, because the check that you received is because the district stayed within the cap, and this year you received the, they took it into account the year 14-15 and 15-16.
The
larger check.
Yes,
you're
welcome.
That's it.
Thank you very much.
Thank you.
So the next section of the agenda tonight is questions and comments regarding tonight's agenda only. We'll have general questions if things are not on the agenda after the agenda. But if there's any questions or comments regarding tonight's agenda only, which you know, while Ms. Perkins is still here, I'll include in there the tax cap and revenue presentation if you have questions on that. Does anybody have any questions on the agenda tonight? Remember, we're recording, so if you do, come up to the mic, please. Give your name. Anybody? Okay. We can do this in a block other than the donations unless anybody has specific questions or comments on the line. Do you? Anybody? Okay, so I'm going to
do the whole.
Well, the number 17 and then we'll 17. And then 6 from 7 to 17.
Okay, so can I have a motion to accept the minutes of the regular meeting of March 2nd?
Motion. Second. All in favor?
Yes.
Yes. Motion carries unanimously. So go 6 through 17.
Motion to accept items 6 through 17. 17.
Motion. Second. I just have a question. Carol, can you talk to me just about the limited income disability exemption? I saw the letter in the packet, but I just want to make sure we're clear what it is.
Four households are eligible for that.
What is it?
It's they get an exemption based upon their income.
Uh-huh.
And we've been doing it since I've been here.
Mm-hmm.
And so you have to do it every year.
Mm-hmm. They get an exemption from property taxes as a result of school.
We also have the fireman exemption. There are a few different exemptions.
Okay. All in favor?
Yes.
Motion carries unanimously.
Recommended action that upon the recommendation of the superintendent of schools, the Board of Education accepts the following donation. Donation of $1,228.50 from the St. George's PTA to the Clayton Ewey Elementary Warm Author and adjust the budget accordingly. Donation of $1,500 from the St. George's Youth Organization for field paint and adjust the budget code accordingly. And a donation of goods and services for the purpose of resurfacing soft bowling field from Meadowmere Concrete and Roanoke Sand and Gravel. Approximate value $8,000 to
$12,000. Motion.
Motion.
Second.
Second.
All in favor?
Yes.
Yes. Motion carries unanimously. As always, I mean, the you see the struggles that we go through with the budget and how hard it is to kind of maintain the program that we've got with the tax cap. So the donations, you know, from the PTA, St. Richard's Youth, and Meadowmere Concrete, Roanoke Sand and Gravel are, you know, extremely valuable to us. You know, for us to spend $10,000 to resurface a field while, you know, I walk on the field and I know that they're wet. It's necessary. It's a very difficult weight and balance. So I certainly appreciate it and appreciate the work that the PTA does and St. Mirch's Youth Organization does. Thank you.
Can I just ask, is that it's not St. Mirch's Youth, it's Mirch's Youth Organization.
Not
St. Mirch's. You're right.
MYO.
Yeah.
MYO. Tony would have called me tomorrow.
Uh-huh.
Yeah, June 19th. What's that? Yeah, June 19th through 24 to 5 together. 5. Yeah. Motion. Second.
Second.
All in favor?
Yes.
Yes. Motion carries unanimously. So the next section, we just put for general discussion payroll audit. I got a letter from Mr. Ryan, who's our auditor, our internal claims auditor.
He's our claims auditor.
Yes. And his request was, listen, every other week, I audit payroll, and I, you know, take these steps, and it's no longer required by New York State. So what we did was I sent a note to our auditors and said, you know, what do you see other schools doing? They said, well, it's not required. It's a lot of time. It's okay to not do it. And, you know, I discussed with the auditors and did we go to Garcia or no? Auditors. And we discussed and determined that, you know, it's an inordinate amount of work for something that's not required, but we'd still like to have it once a year. So I'm personally fine with that after discussing it with the auditors, changing the process. The one question I had, which we're looking into, is, you know, we currently issue a lot of paper checks. I guess some people have opted for direct deposit, but we still issue paper checks to many.
Not many, but we still do.
So there's people that come in each Friday and pick them up and deposit them. And it's a manual process, and so there's time there. So we just asked if, you know, we could look into the process of, say, once and for all, you know, we're going to save some time, save some effort, have it be, you know, direct deposit to wherever you'd like, and, you know, then look into whether we can do the same with tax W-2s. So Carol's looking at that. So unless anybody's
going to... When did they stop requiring that? When did that change? The payroll audit.
The fact that
that Jim Ryan was doing. When was that?
I think over time, I don't know exactly when, but it's a compensated control. And because payroll, you know, payroll makes up 75%
right.
of the budget. And so the focus has always been to do at least one time a year a payroll audit. Mr. Ryan has done Mr. Ryan has done about, I think, 4 payroll audits a year. It's very time consuming. He, you know, the steps that he has to take, a lot of times he takes one of my staff members and they accompany him to the school. And it's not necessary to do
every single year. Yeah, I'm total agreement too. It makes sense.
But as long as you're showing you do have a compensated control, that there are steps that you take that take place. Payroll files to make sure that they're not a fictitious employee. Although we have so many steps, still, it's just a way of checking payroll.
Brings us to the next section of the agenda tonight. Questions and comments from the community on matters not on tonight's agenda. Anybody have any?
Yeah.
Step up to the mic, please. Just say your name. Like I said, we're recording.
Okay. My full name?
Yes.
Armand Lannard. Okay, so do I step up to the microphone?
Yeah, I mean, you just talk. It'll pick you up. Take your time, whatever.
We came here tonight. You probably noticed there's a lot of older kids here. We're actually with the FRC, which is the oldest robotics competition thing. And we came here tonight to support the little kids originally. But then we found out a couple days ago that one of our main robotics instructor was denied tenure at the school, and we figured we'd come talk about appealing that tenure. John?
I have something to say.
Sure.
Should I say my name too, or should I just... Yeah, I'm John Perez. We feel as though he meant so much to this student body, and not just the robotics team itself, and we actually have signatures by a whole bunch of kids, actually 202 to be exact, because we just wanted to show how much he not only like just taught kids, but he also like inspired people to be better. He would push people. A lot of his classes, they'd be specifically hard. Well, a lot of kids who you hear would be very ignorant to his class would say they're very hard, but I feel as though he's just preparing people for college itself and how the real world actually is. And his dedication proved to be pretty key to me why I feel as though he shouldn't have left, he shouldn't be denied tenure, because story for me. I moved in here from last year to St. Rich's, and I remember from the robotics team, we usually have practice at 10 a.m. on Saturdays. So I usually tend to be a bit early, so I arrived at 8:30 a.m. because I like to catch up, and we printed out the whole set of manuals and what the game was about, so I'd like to just, you know, get a head start on it, because, that's just kind of my philosophy. The earliest bird gets, you know, the advantage. So that's what I did. And surprisingly, he would, even though practice was at 10, he'd be there at 8. And just, I've had my fair share of schools that I've been to, because I've moved from Jersey to Hampton Bays to St. Rich's. And I just, it's really hard nowadays to see people that are not, self interested and have like personal issues to take care of, because nowadays you see like mentors or coaches, sure they care for the team, but at the same time they have kids at home or they have other priorities to take care of. But and even though he has a kid that I think she's not even the age of one yet, he still has time to arrive early and set up the woodshop. It'd be very messy because, we're kids, and we just don't like putting stuff away. So it'd be really scattered around, and it'd be really hard to find tools, and he'd just get there early. We'd have conversations about the whole competition, because, you know, it's very big, and there's a lot of problem-solving that's involved with it. So, and just that dedication and pure, I don't know. It's very hard to describe, because you don't see it in many people nowadays, and that kind of intrigued me. And I feel as though that's one of the key aspects that you guys should take into consideration.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you.
I would just like to further continue talking about this. So, Mr. VK one.
What's your name?
My name is Kevin Gamellan.
Thanks, Kevin.
So, Mr. VK one. Not only did he spend those 3 hours every single day, 6 days a week, in robotics for like an entire month.
After school.
Yeah, after school.
All day on Saturday.
All day.
Yes.
And it usually went even a lot further. And he had a newborn, which is amazing to me, how he could even make that time. And I don't even understand how he went home to his wife. She was probably not exactly the happiest, but he still is very dedicated. Even before robotics, he would stay after school to teach kids anything about technology or what they're going to need to further in life. He taught me statics, mechanics of materials, programming, a whole bunch of things, Arduino. And this was just in his free time. He's not getting paid or anything. So I feel like we owe him as a community to, we owe him, and we shouldn't let him go and get rid of him just because of how much dedication he's given to us, our school. And he's like one of the greatest teachers I've ever had. He's taught me more in his free time than high school and middle school has taught me at all. So I just feel like we owe him as a community, and we should really thank him by not getting rid of him.
Thank you.
Matt Plastrick, I'd like to say one final thing about this. I think an issue we have in schools now is there's not enough emphasis on mathematics, the sciences, and technology. And he's the first teacher I've seen that teaches his technology electives at like a collegiate level. He encourages the growth intellectually of anybody interested in these different areas, as vastly different as they are. And it's heartbreaking to me to see that somebody who's so enthusiastic at teaching and encouraging growth in these areas, that we don't take that into consideration enough about like the time he's put into us, not just into robotics, but in all of the vast things he teaches.
I also want to talk about this. When I was a freshman,
just
for the moment. when I was a freshman, My first period class was World of Technology with Mr. Van Curen, so he was the first teacher I ever had in high school. And before I entered high school, I kind of had this outlook on school, where school is a place where I have to go 6 hours a day, people tell me information, then like a couple weeks later I tell them back to it, I just say the information back on the test. And Mr. Van Curen, his philosophy in teaching is completely different. He'll tell you all the things you need to know to find the answer, but he's not going to tell you the answer. You have to find out the answer, which is amazing when you have a club like robotics, when that's what we're supposed to do. And robotics as a program, Mr. Roy, how easy is it running robotics just like with one mentor as opposed to two?
I'm really 22 years old. It's very difficult. Virtually impossible.
Yeah, like
to run by yourself. There's so many aspects, and our team is growing. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, our team's getting bigger, and we're kind of losing mentors, and especially one as great as VK, who, what Kevin said, he puts in the time, he puts in the hours to make sure that you know everything you can. He'll encourage you. He's what John said. He's a tough teacher. But he also manages to, he doesn't make robotics miserable or like this is a class. It's something we enjoy and we learn a lot and we're pushed and we're challenged. And I think if you take away DK, then a lot of that is gone. And I think that'd be a shame.
Thank you.
My name is Bailey Holt, and I just started robotics, and I just got into high school. I'm ninth grade, and I just finished football. It's just so hard. And when I come to robotics, it's a lot harder. I mean, just problem solving. Like, I'm versing, like, seniors in football, but in this, I feel like it's just challenging. Like, and it's not just challenging, but it's also so much fun. Like, I can't even explain how much fun it is. And knowing that these people here have done it before, a couple of years back, like 2-3 years, but this is my first year, and I feel like I want to do it again. I'm not a big engineering person, but I think this is where I'm going to stay. Football was a priority to me, but I think this is also going to be another priority.
Thank you.
It's okay, take your time. Take your time.
I had this whole thing lined up.
Speak from the heart, Bill.
Four other people in this room are in a class called Engineering and Robotics. Mr. Van Curen is currently making the class, basically, as we speak. It's all from scratch. We get to be a part of making that. He doesn't just make it himself. He lets you understand what's happening. He helps you understand what's happening. He lets you help him understand what's happening. Which is not bad at this.
Well said.
Oh, this before robotics even started, he let me stay in his classroom, the computer lab, for 2 hours after school just to work on something, because I enjoyed it that much, and he was grading papers anyway. So I would be in there, and whenever something went wrong or I had a question, he would answer it. And I would get to see the finished product not work, and then I get to try it again and watch it break. But it gave me that work ethic and that drive to keep on trying until it did work, which it did. But it was still fun.
Thank you.
I'd just like to add one more thing.
Most teachers, you'll go to them, I'm Kevin Gamel, by the way, but most teachers, you'll go to them to see them 10th period, and they might be on their phone, talking, just doing all this stuff not related to their field or what they should be doing. Mr. VK is not like that. He leads by example. You'll go to see him, and you'll see him like learning himself something completely unrelated, and he's going to try and integrate that into his courses. So he's always adapting and learning, and that's something you need from a technology teacher in this fast-growing industry and world where everything's changing. So that's why that's one of the other great things about Mr. VK and his attributes is adaptability and how he learns, and he's always striving. He leads by example.
Thank you. He's probably the most unique thing I've noticed about him is how much he genuinely enjoys passing knowledge on to others. He gets so much satisfaction of teaching others the ways of doing things that he knows well. And it's a great thing.
So I really appreciate and I commend you all for coming out here and standing up for something or someone, you know, that you feel for. So first, thank you for that. And, you know, I think it's a great trait that you've got that. I think that standing up in public and expressing your views is a great learning experience in and of itself. And I'm sure you know, we can't, as a personnel matter, talk to you about what, you know, what any issues are or what the process is at all. But I want to thank you for coming. It's an important thing to learn as part of your education that you should stand up for what you believe in. So thank you very much.
Thank you.
Are there any other questions or comments from the community tonight? Yes, sir.
It's on the same topic. I'm not a student. You're just a guest. My name is Sport Moran. I'm a parent. I'm an engineer. I graduated from the United States Merchant Marine Academy 25 years ago. I have my chief engineer's license, unlimited horsepower. I currently work at Brookhaven National Labs as a steam distribution engineer. And I've talked to Mr. Van Curen about engineering. I've talked to other parents on Long Island about the engineering program that we have here at Santa Merchants. That is, as far as I can tell, I don't know the goings-on, but it seems to me that for a large part, it was developed by Mr. Van Curen. And other parents on Long Island are jealous, or I should say envious, that we have such a teacher here. That they talk to me about, well, what does he do? He must do, like, computer assisted drawing. I'm like, yeah, he does that. But he starts with a piece of paper and a T-square. He teaches from the ground up the basics of engineering that I learned in college. My daughter, at the age of 14, learned how to TIG weld. Most people don't even know what TIG welding is, and very few know how to do it. I find it amazing. He talks to students. I've witnessed him talk to students with such a professionalism that it is not a mentor talking to a, you know, I'm going to teach you this. It is, we are peers. We're learning together. I know information. I'm going to impart it to you. You're going to impart information to me. You don't see that in educators very often. Most of the time, there's a set curriculum, and we look at what we've been handed from you know, previous generations. And, you know, math doesn't change. History, you know, you can interpret it differently. You can talk about it, but engineering is one of these things that is constantly changing and growing. And you were talking about earlier when they were talking about college. What do we see? How do we see your interests being translated into what's out there in the real world, in real life situations? And this engineering program that we have in this high school, it's exactly that. The robotics team last year went and took a tour, not to a university, but to Biodeck, which takes concepts and makes it into productive for sale items from the ground up. You know, they're one of the sponsors, and they took a tour of the facility that's local. Today, I was a judge at the Brookhaven National Labs Maglev competition, and one of the people, I don't remember who it was because I was down the hallway, said, engineers build something that was never built before. And these kids, every one of them who takes his class does that. They create something that's never been created before. And they do it using the tools that they learn in math and they learn in science. what they create, and they gain a passion for it, and it changes their life. So I don't know what's going on with Mr. Van Kuren. I only heard about this yesterday, and I felt I had to come and speak, because to lose this, what we have, we've lost a lot. And if we don't grab onto this program, then what are we here for? You know, we're just giving everybody the same. Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Hi, everybody. I'm Dan Fournier. I've been teaching here for quite a long time. I've been teaching technology for about 28 years. And he's one of the best I've seen. He really is a great teacher. And he teaches the students what's right, you know, not just the curriculum, but he teaches them what's right, right from wrong, and I'd hate to see him go.
Thank you. Thank you, everybody. Next section of the agenda, dates to remember, Board of Education. The next Board of Ed meeting will be April 5th, 2016 at 7:30 in the district office boardroom. Oh, before we go, are we all okay to move that one meeting? Because I think we'll approve that tonight to move it so that it can be on the agenda.
Mm-hmm.
You're good with it, I know.
Whatever works.
You're good with it? Yeah. Okay. So, motion to change the calendar and move the April 20th meeting to April 15th.
And we're going to adjust the budget calendar as well, because that's included.
Yeah. Adjust budget, which is
yeah.
Friday.
Adjust budget calendar and the Board of Education calendar.
Friday night, which everybody would want. Motion. Second. All in favor?
Yes.
Yes, motion carries unanimously. Thank you. Motion to adjourn to executive session for purposes of discussing discussions regarding proposed pending or current litigation, collective negotiations under the table of the law of the CMTA and CMPA, other matters of disclosure of which would result in an unwarranted invasion of personal privacy. Motion. Second.
Second.
All in favor?
Yes.
Yes. Motion carries unanimously. Thank you very much for coming, everybody.
Thank you. Thank you.